And hi, everybody. It's actually Free Radio is still alive, at least for another few days. My second to last show coming up. I find nothing on the air in the studio, but I'm here, so stay tuned for Bathrop Spears Broadsides coming up on 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. And today is the 17th of September, 2015. Don't you forget it.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of bread lines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. A song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
Hey, and that's, that's our theme song. Good evening, I'm Robert Norris. This is a slightly late Bathrop Spears Broadsides, our second to the last broadcast show here in Santa Cruz. Although, you know, there is talk of some streaming that will continue after the station goes down, which is going to be happening, I guess, on Sunday. It's either Sunday or Monday. I think Sunday we dismantle. It must be Sunday. We're going to dismantle the furniture here and leave, having because of a combination of rent problems. And we have to relocate to another place because of new management. And we're looking for a place still. And again, the people to contact if you have any information is the website that we're on, which is freakradio.org. freakradio.org, or you can give me a call at 423-4833. That's my home phone and also a number for the organization I work with, HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. So, that's what's happening. The call-in number here, as ever, is 427-3772, 427-FRSC, 427-3772, and invite you to call in with updates about what's happening out there in the real world, even your thoughts and feelings about what we're talking about here in the radio world, and other stuff that you think is worthy of putting out to other folks. I tend to try to focus in this show on particular areas, mostly homeless and civil rights issues that affect poor people. So I will be kind of, hey, what's happened? Let's not talk about global warming particularly, although that affects everybody. I mean, interested in local events that come up and come in, you know, upcoming stuff that people might want to go to that they don't know about. So definitely keep us advised of that at 4272. The most recent kind of events that have happened for me of significance, my focus has been pretty much on the Freedom Sleepers events at City Hall. That's the protest that seeks to end the criminalization of homeless people at night in Santa Cruz, which has been a scandal for decades here in Santa Cruz, and causes falling out among some activists, although a lot of us got together, again, for the 10th Freedom Sleepout at City Hall, where every night, and that'll be next Tuesday, will be another one, it'll be number 11 coming up, we roll out the sleeping bags or, you know, tuck ourselves into our nearby vehicles, both of these events, activities equally illegal, and then we crash out. We begin usually by putting our sleeping bags down in the City Hall courtyard area, which is a big grassy area in front of City Hall, right across from the library, the main public library in downtown Santa Cruz. And some homeless people put up small protective tents. Folks usually have their signs up. There's some tables with food and literature. And as the evening grows on toward 10 o'clock, we get the, well, usually we have first alarm security guards. In the past, relatively low-key prior to the deeper night time. But more recently, forceful and even violent towards activists. That happened on Tuesday. In fact, there is an a video of recent events, the brutal arrest of Christine Barnes. Christina Barnes, actually, is her name, which Alex DeRosi documented, or at least he wrote about it, and he posted a it's a fairly lengthy video. I guess it's not terribly long, but it's more than 5 minutes, and it shows her screaming and struggling and police pushing her. Actually, it wasn't police. People who think they're police. First alarm security guards pushing her face into the agave plant. Well, laying her face down on an area that has an agave plant right there. Maybe there it was a circumstantial. And it looks like they may have fucked up this time big time because attorneys, or at least one attorney, is now interested in suing them. And our own in-house legal advises me that security guards in the state of California have no arrest powers at all, other than a citizen arrest where you're not allowed to handcuff someone on an infraction offense. Although, again, I haven't checked that out. That's what Steve Plaich was telling me earlier today. So it looks like the individuals who committed this behavior may be up for spanking, and the organization that organized it, First Alarm, may be up for some trouble, hopefully. And even worse, or better, if you will, the city council, city authority, and the entire city government, I guess is the words I'm looking for, as well as the city manager and the city police chief, who are colluding with, cooperating with, covering for First Alarm, and to some extent, one of the city council is hiring them. I guess city manager hires them, and the city council authorizes the hiring. So that's something I'm going to begin to play. I've started to play some stuff from the protest, which happened on Tuesday. Usually these things start around 5 or 6, and they go through the night. And I'm there for much of the time, less on this last protest because I wanted to work on some stuff that I had to do elsewhere, and I have a Huff meeting the next day. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, but a number of people were there. There were 20 sleepers at least, and many of them stayed through the night in spite of tumultuous police and First Alarm security harassment and abusive behavior, I have to say. Well, let's listen to some of this. and see what we can do. If you want to call in with any thoughts, if you were a witness to any of this stuff, if you have some reactions that you want to pass on to the rest of the community or those who are listening to us, give a call, 427-3772. Well, here we are at the sleepout number 10. It's about 6 o'clock, and we have a few folks who are here. Brent Adams has got a huge RV parked here with right behind my vehicle. The City Hall courtyard side of the street is covered with, well, the meters are covered with little red temporary no parking hoods. And a porta potty is available. It's on the other side of the street. It looks like the Red Food Not Bombs truck has showed up with various cooking equipment. And the porta potty, which we had the first night we did this way back in July, and then we had problems transporting it because the porta potty company, there's a tongue twister, actually didn't provide appropriate lighting material for it to be transported around. And we kind of sort of a wrangle with that, but we were able, through the work of Abby Samuels, thank you, Abby, to get another porta potty, and we've had one for the last two events. And that means that even though the City Hall people, the city management, the city managers, the mayor, Don Lane, do not attempt to, in fact, refuse to keep the bathrooms that are actually there open at night so people can use them, we have facilities. That doesn't stop kind of a low-grade, nasty, rumor-rousing city staff campaign against this protest, claiming that there's poo-poo and pee-pee here and nasty behavior and so forth from going on. That is to say, the accusations go on. But I put in a Public Records Act request recently for the specifics of any particular calls to the police, findings of specific problems that were there. And I got, I'll read you what I got. I got two different letters that were all the information that they, the complaints that they had. And it should be understood that the series of complaints supposedly were the reason that the police became much more swift and brutal. Brutal is a little strong, but certainly forceful when they arrived at 10 o'clock at night, which is when Santa Cruz uniquely closes the area around its city government as though it has the right to do so. The city government does, actually. It closes itself down so it is insulated from protest, even of a peaceful nature, at night. Without any finding of any particular real problems that are there in the sense of property destruction. I mean, obviously, it's a problem for the city officials when they're being criticized so harshly for taking away the human rights of poor and homeless people outside. But tough shit, as far as that goes. That goes with the territory. They should know better, and hopefully the whole point of these protests is to encourage the community to let them know better. So there has been an intensification of the entire attack on protesters through the establishment of high-intensity Klieg lights, through the putting in of these no-parking jackets on parking meters, through this time there were five first alarm security guards rather than the usual one or two, and it was supposedly justified by the concerns and complaints and real problems created by past protests. And protesters have been pretty careful, particularly those who are managing the protests, Phil Posner, Abby Samuels, and others, when they're not being harassed and ticketed and driven away. And that usually they come back, even if they are, as Abby Samuels did after being arrested on Tuesday for not getting out her ID. Sort of similar to what Israel Dawson found weeks ago. An officer demanded she identify herself, even though the officer next to her knew exactly who she was. And she said, he can tell you. Forbes is the officer can tell. He declined to say, and the officer then arrested her for interfering or obstructing with an officer. You have this kind of nonsensical, not really nonsensical, but clearly focused repression going down. And so It's no fun, and certainly no fun for Abby. You went to jail. And I'll be reading some of these public records later in the broadcast. But let's just start tuning in on a little audio I took as we began the protest, or at least as I arrived at the protest, 6 o'clock two evenings ago. Toby from San Jose seems to be stalking around, but where's the sleep train, eh, Toby?
I don't know. Nobody came, so...
So the train just sort of stayed in the station.
The train just sort of stayed in the station.
And we.
But if you'd like to participate in the sleep train, go to the Santa Cruz Sleep Train Facebook group and give a holler. Because I am willing to do it.
Let's help unload this truck, shall we? Or is there anything?
There's nothing we need.
Nothing we need. Okay, well, that's good. So that's good. Welcome to the sleep out.
Hello.
How's it going? If you're in need of a hug, you let me know.
How are you?
I'm always in need of a hug.
You're always in need of a hug.
Well, often in need of a hug.
Anyway. Yeah.
So, again, we're talking with... A newcomer here, a little shy, perhaps. What brings you to the sleep out?
Actually, I came to meet some friends here.
Ah, so you're simply... It's a coincidence. You're not really here for the sleep out.
No.
That's all right. Hey, man. Are you going to be sleeping? That could be. That could be. Some suggestions... for moving the sleep out around. And it's... we do have a convocation of First Alarm security guards who are sort of huddling in light blue. And there's one guy in darker blue. I suspect he's a community service officer, or SCPD, on the grass. There are a few signs here. People have a right to sleep at night. A ban on sleep is a ban on life. Freedom sleepers. And one lone table is set up. There's a man who has a shopping cart pile is about twice as high as the cart itself. And there are three as yet unhoisted Klieg lights that are parked along the street, all along the Center Street, whereas before there was one along Church Street and two along Center Street. So who knows what kind of exciting changes and adventures await us. Need some help over there, old man? Steve, need help? Steve!
Yeah.
You need help?
I think I
got it. Good. I want to make sure that all is well. Any comments before I leave you here alone and lost on the sidewalk? She shakes her head. Good to see you.
Is Keith here today?
Keith is not going to be here tonight. He's in Taos, I believe.
He's in Taos.
Yes. He's be gone for a couple weeks. He'll be back. And we will be carrying on as we usually do. Hopefully, anyway.
But are you in need of food?
That's a good... I think food is always welcome here. We have some food. I think there's some bread and some brownies here. Loads of bread on the table. Let's... I'm going to walk around and see what I can find here. Make yourself at home. This is your city hall. How's it going? Exciting happening that I've missed so far?
So far, I got my stuff stolen last night again. So.
Your stuff was taken last night?
Yeah, my pillow, my sleeping bag, and go to the bathroom, and they're gone.
Now, was it stashed, and then it disappeared when you came back? Or?
Well, I was laid out, like, you know, but I was at the right people. Not that many, but the younger guys, they're here, you know, they're here.
And I understand they were giving tickets to the Red Church a week ago.
Yeah, I got two.
Now, have they stopped giving tickets? Are people sleeping there again?
They're still coming in and stuff. So
are they then? You mean they're not giving tickets, or they?
They are giving tickets if they come. I guess if they're, whatever it is.
They're sending in the thieves to drive people away.
I don't know. Maybe. But I know that that was going on. The minister's kind of ridiculous. Is that what you talk about?
Minister is
I don't know who he is. I mean,
Joel Miller. Joel Miller is the minister.
You're going to ask to me
something.
I think I wear a shawl. I don't respect him no more.
You have no more respect for him anymore?
Oh, hell no. Because the way he talked to me?
Is that because of something you personally saw or because of what?
No, I was laying down and he just started going off. But what? I don't know.
He ran you off?
Yeah. And he can't come back anymore. I still go back there anyway.
So you ignored him?
Well, I didn't ignore him. I stopped going over there for a bit. But then I seen everybody else there, so I just went over there. And I leave earlier. I leave about... I'll be up before 5, so they should come about 5:30.
The police or the minister?
The police. Well, he came in one day only. I've seen him so far. So. And I think it's either somebody's calling him, somebody that's in the group. I don't know who it is, but, you know.
And what this man is talking about is, I think the evening before, maybe a couple of evenings before, but the evening before on Monday night, there is a meal at the Red Church, which I didn't get to, but I got some information that some Freedom Sleeper activists did to come to the protest, as we usually do on Monday nights at the Red Church. A number of people served has been intentionally reduced by Father Joel Miller, who announced he's only giving out 75 tickets, and you have to have a ticket in order to have food, although I don't know how tightly that's enforced. More perhaps important than that is many have used the sides of the Red Church as sort of a sanctuary at night to sleep in, and at times Miller has been liberal, and other times, and this is one of those times, according to this guy, not so liberal. And in this time, here he's speaking actually of Miller. Yes, either Miller was driving him away or announcing some kind of a negative policy. It isn't entirely clear, but it doesn't sound very good. And I've had my differences with Joel Miller on this whole situation. I've aired them here on Free Radio. I don't run a church. I don't try to run mediate between gentrification crazy, property value obsessed people like Cynthia Matthews and her council gang. She has a house across the street that's a historic house right next to Jack's Hamburgers, and was responsible for trying to run Joel Miller out of the church because he wanted to do this one night a week meal and ministry. And it's, you know, it just it gives you an indication of the kind of the climate we have in Santa Cruz. Let's hear some more from City Hall two nights ago.
Somebody's going.
Well, I appreciate the update. We've been talking with
Lupe Avila.
Senor?
Lupe? Yeah.
Thank you, Lupe. I'll be setting up a table and...
If you
need
a blanket or anything, I'll take it.
Man needs a blanket. Anybody's got a blanket over here? This man needs a blankie.
So far, no takers, but you never can tell. The evening is young.
For a while, for a couple of the first few sleepouts at the City Hall, Freedom Sleepers, then called, I think, the Community Campout or Homeless Lives Matter, the... People have been spending a lot more time often debating the name of the group than organizing. At least that's been one of my gripes. But, you know, there's differences of opinion about what the name should be. We don't want to offend the Black Lives Matter folks by seeming to co-opt or steal their moniker. But that isn't my belief at all. But that's the belief of some folks who really take that view quite strongly. So... Folks are definitely invited to come on down next Tuesday, where we will be coming back. I just want to say at the outset that I was somewhat discouraged by, of course, the combined repression, and plus the fact that the repression tends to aggravate people who then just don't go to sleep but walk around kind of orating or shouting at night. And some people say, oh, they're the wing nuts. And I suppose I would say that, too, in some respects. In other respects, I think it has to do with the fact that there is an increasingly repressive scene set up that people feel upset by. And their upsetness is not always expressed appropriately. But the anxiety level goes up and the anger level goes up, and that results in some folks being unable to sleep. In fact, some have said they stay awake at night because of the sleeping ban, because they don't want to be illegal at night. In Santa Cruz, as newcomers may not know, it's illegal after 11 o'clock at night to fall asleep, not just to camp, not just to set up camping equipment, not just to, you know, park your vehicle and have to set up a tent or something, but to fall asleep anywhere on any public property in Santa Cruz and on much private property. And there are some very limited exceptions if you are in a vehicle of two or three that are allowed by a church or a nonprofit or a business downtown, or if you're on somebody's private property and in a backyard or a side yard or front yard not visible from the street. There are a couple of minor exceptions. But generally speaking, there is this draconian no sleeping in Santa Cruz. Now, it's not enforced, or you'd have hundreds and hundreds of people in jail every night. But people are afraid of it. People have to suffer from it. They hide from it. They can't sleep in well-lighted areas, which is what we're doing, of course, at City Hall. We are sleeping in a very well-lighted area, in fact. These huge Klieg lights were set up to make it even more uncomfortable for us, though ironically, they provide the basis for our video crew. And from this, in this sleepout, we've had a persistent and determined video crew. Lauren and Israel have been, and indeed even now, Israel's in the studio doing some documenting of this next to the last show on Free Radio Santa Cruz. They've been at every one of the Freedom Sleepouts documenting what's gone down there. And as I said before, on Santa Cruz Indie Media, there's a number of stories about the sleepout. And one of them is by Alex DeRosi, First Alarm Security Guards Violently Detain Woman at Santa Cruz City Hall. And you can find that. And you can learn of the capers of Nathan Hammock and Ken Hietala, who are the two security guards who were responsible for what many felt was a form of brutality and torture against an African-American woman who they felt, I guess the older guard, Ken Hietala, who some nights before had been harassing sleepers and demanding they get up and leave. I suppose you can say that's just his job, but it's harassment nonetheless. And sleepers drove him away, said, get out of here. We don't want you around here. And then some others who were not sleepers, but who were video people, were trying to take his picture. And he was, go away. You can't take my picture. You can't take my picture. And it's against the law. He was making all kinds of essentially mistaken comments about his rights as a harasser to harass people because he has a First Alarm security uniform on. He came back, and he was part of this group of five First Alarm security guards that were there. And he was not really the eager beaver there, but he did file a complaint of battery, apparently, against Christina Barnes, who was then seized by him and by Nathan Hammock and dragged across the lawn and, as I said, ended up face down with an agave plant painfully close. And I don't know how much she was or wasn't injured by the agave plant. It certainly looked like it was there as she was screaming. But the handcuffs that this guy, Nathan, who wore a special dark blue outfit as... At first, I thought he was a different police agency or a different security agency than the other four First Alarm security guards who were there. But then it seemed they're all part of the first, what some people call First Attack or False Alarm. But the official name that they have is First Alarm Security. That'll be coming up shortly. And again, the video that's online is much more graphic than anything I could describe. It's... I'll play a little of the soundtrack of it, but I prefer actually to play my own commentary because I try to describe what I see happening, and a lot of the video simply consists of screams from this woman and angry outbursts of rage from people watching nearby. And then, of course, the stop resisting template cry, which all security guards and police department folks I would imagine are trained to use when they wish to give the impression that they're simply using a reasonable force to detain a suspect. It isn't even clear. The suspect was, the claim was that she unlawfully touched one of the security guards. Does that mean, you know, she was fondling his wee-wee? No. It means that they were looming over her, and they were within her space, this is by her account, and she brushed the older guy's, either his chest or his arm or some such thing. And that became the pretext for, apparently earlier they'd wanted her to leave because she was having a dispute with her partner, and they felt that was unseemly at City Hall. Well, we might not like people disputing at City Hall. You know, we're some of the freedom sleepers would like everything to look middle class, bourgeois, and calm and peaceful, and, you know, kumbaya-ish, but it ain't sometimes, and that's how life goes. And we all have the right to be at City Hall, particularly if we are trying to, A, raise an issue that the city council does not want to raise, and B, get a place to sleep at night. No, it's not going to be a comfortable place. No, it's not going to be a place where you're not going to be harassed. But it is a place where there's a larger group of people who are more likely to deter police violence and who will eventually get you a place to sleep on the sidewalk, which you could not do if you were alone. You try to do that alone, the police will run you off and intimidate you to death. Whereas when there are 6 or 7 or 10 or I think there were 20 people asleep last night on the sidewalk, at least initially before the police came, because that was our strategy after the area was, quote, closed at night, we moved to the sidewalk and slept there. I moved to my car, as I said, because I prefer the luxury accommodations. It's also illegal to sleep in your car. But note that while it is not legal to sleep on the sidewalk, it is, because it's not legal to sleep anywhere in Santa Cruz, as I mentioned before, it seems the city does not want to give out sleeping tickets in public places where there's a lot of media around. And there are a couple of, I think, reasons that might be the case. I can only speculate. But today I got some public records. I mentioned that earlier. From the city government. One of them was in response to a request I made for all reports, documents, interoffice correspondence, and correspondence with other agencies from June 15th to the present regarding vandalism, improper waste disposal, littering, fecal and urine deposits, as well as abusive behavior concerning any workers in the City Hall complex or any protesters. And I asked for reports by police, first alarm security guards, and other security agencies. The only thing I got back were two documents, two letters. No police reports, no first alarm security reports, no specific named citizen complaints. And I'm jumping a little back to what I was talking about earlier, which is the reason that we are facing Klieg lights and increased police pressure, increased first alarm security guards, is the allegation that there is all this nasty stuff going on from the protest side. And so I said, good, show me the documents, show me the reports, show me the specifics. And this is what I got. Here's one. It is it's a note from Tina Scholl, who's the assistant city manager. And she says, regarding City Hall safety, that's what she calls it. It's dated August 25th. Please see the message below. Each department will be sending out this out to their staff who work at City Hall. I know this group has impacted you. For that, I am sorry. Please let me know if you have any questions. Of course, the group that's really impacting the city workers and the entire city are the heads of the departments and the city council and the mayor and the city manager and the city attorney, who are refusing to address issues that cities like Vancouver, Washington are now addressing. And cities like Los Angeles and San Diego have already addressed, which is you cannot criminalize people at night if you have no legal place for them to go. You can't criminalize, that's a criminalization of their status as human beings. And you can't say, oh, we made it a law that it's illegal to sleep at night, therefore you're violating the law, therefore we're not really criminalizing you, we're just criminalizing you if you go to sleep. So just stay awake, you know, 24 hours. No. And that, you also can't really beat that rap by saying, well, we allow you to sleep during the day in the parks. Or, you know, we won't arrest you if you sleep between the hours of 8:30 in the morning and 11 o'clock at night. because most people have to sleep between 11 and 8:30 if they are to engage in any kind of a normal life. It is so obviously a harassment tactic and tool, as the police like to say, that they given to them in order to deal with crime. And, you know, I can understand it makes it easier for a police officer if he can roust anybody who's lying down and sleeping at night and demand their ID and demand to, you know, their what they're doing and that sort of thing. That might make it easier for him. I mean, and make people feel like they have to obey orders by police, that they really should say, you know, buzz off. Leave me alone. I have no legal place to sleep until you provide that. I don't want to talk to you. You know. And maybe as we get along, more and more people will learn to do that. But and it's not always safe to do that, obviously, with respect to police officers. But if you're in a group of protesters, it becomes safer. You're still not safe. They will still haul you away on all kinds of pretexts, as we found at the Tuesday demonstrations. Anyway, this this note Tina Scholl sent to the department heads was this. Good afternoon, city colleagues. This message is particularly intended for those of us who work at City Hall campus and have been impacted by the regular protest activity on our grounds that now seems to be occurring each Tuesday evening and Wednesday morning. First, we want to convey our regrets where you've been affected by the activities. City employees are not the target of this political protest, yet you are bearing the brunt of the impact as you come to work and throughout your day. We want to assure you the City Hall needs to be safe for our employees, visitors, and customers. Illegal activities will not be tolerated. Call 911 and so forth. We're watching the situation and have dealt with it thus far with nightly police patrols. Our officers have been ticketing for trespassing. The City Hall Park is closed to 10 p.m. and 6 a.m., a period of time I'd like to note when no city employees are there at all, but the only specific time when they are actually driving people away. Of course, I'm sure they'd like to drive people away 24 hours a day, but in fact, calling the police to enforce trespass laws when city employees aren't there is so clearly an attack on protesters and not an attempt to deal with the safety of city employees that it, as we say, doesn't pass the straight face test, as my old opponent Mike Rodkin used to put it. We plan to increase first alarm presence. Please keep in mind our City Hall is a public place. Not all activities witnessed are illegal. Anyway, this is signed by a whole bunch of first names. Martin, meaning Martine Bernal, Tina Scholl, Danette, meaning Danette Shoemaker, Kevin Vogel, Chief of Police, and a list of other names, some of whom I recognize, some of whom I don't. Note, there are no specifics at all here whatsoever. So if these exist, they have been destroyed, they're kept being kept secret, or they just are essentially word of mouth. There's a second document, which is dated September 1st, that essentially repeats the same thing by the same person, Assistant City Manager Tina Scholl. It is important you have shared the impacts of these individuals' behaviors in your daily work. We have heard about the vandalism, the threatening and intimidating behaviors, the profanity and level of noise around our offices that has disrupted meetings, interviews, and our work, the garbage, the smoking, drug use and drinking, the human waste, the aggressive behavior towards staff, and how we hear that City Hall is not a welcome place for the public. This is not acceptable. Blah, 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 blah. We regret it. We continue to engage in solutions. Notice, again, a series of unspecifics, of nonspecifics, of this request for any particular complaints that were made. And apparently, none of these complaints were made in writing, if they were made. Smells a little stinky to me. And that is my reaction to that. There have been some other some other documents that I've been able to coax out of the, well, get from the offices of the city government that concern of the broader issue that we the Freedom Sleepers are there to address, which has to do with the rather arcane business of the waiting lists. You may remember I've talked about this before. Santa Cruz has a strange system whereby they allow a private agency, used to be two, the Paul Lee Loft and the River Street Shelter, that if you can coax them to put you on their waiting list, then you will be immunized from at least one kind of citation, a camping ticket. they will be dismissed. And as in theory, they shouldn't even be given to you because you're not supposed to get them. You're not that system is not applicable to you. But in order to make sure that the police job is easier, apparently, or at least has the effect of having the police job is making easier, these two authorities, while they were there, these two groups that allow that are given the ability to write out these get away from camping tickets, get out of jail free cards for camping tickets, have refused to give out statements that you are on their waiting list. So a police officer comes around, you can't show them a statement that says, "Hey, I'm on the waiting list." Now all this sounded, you know, we've been fighting this one for years, saying, you know, come on, let's acknowledge that your shelters are full, acknowledge that someone's on a waiting list. Don't you're being paid to help homeless people, not to make things harder for them. But in fact, that's not really what they're being paid for. You see, they are being paid to perform the function of appearing to help homeless people. The point is that they are the cosmetic face that's on the nasty, ragged, grim visage of what the city council and the city authorities are really doing. Well, they like to, you know, brag about all the wonderful things they're doing for homeless people and all the money they're spending. They maintain laws that criminalize them. And when people protest, they get the sharp end of the axe. In any case, I contacted the River Street Shelter myself, finally, after being unable to get information through other sources, and learned from two employees that they do indeed, they seem to have a more liberal policy, though there is no Paul Lee waiting list. There is a River Street Shelter waiting list. You can get on by just calling them up. You have to renew it every 3 days or so, but you can get on it. You don't have to provide documentation. Anyone can get on it. They won't give you any documentation that you're on the list. They won't give someone who's new who got a camping ticket and says, "I got a camping ticket. Can you give me a letter that says your shelter was full, even if it was?" No, they won't do that either. Which means, of course, that we have to subpoena them and drag them into court if we ever want to get into that, which may happen. But at least you'll be able to get on their waiting list. Well, I've looked at these two documents that just came in from the river about the River Street Shelter. And throughout July and August, no one, zero people were on their waiting list as far as camping tickets went. So the River Street Shelter, whom I called and said, I wanted to find out, wouldn't you like to make sure that people know about this? Because apparently, according to one of our activists here, they put out a note that says, you can get your tickets dismissed by being on the waiting list. I think this is relatively new, but that they mentioned this, although the law has been enforced since 2010, and mentioned River Street Shelter specifically by name. Don't you want people to know about this? Don't you want this to be, you know, so that people can not have to suffer, and you'll find even more people who are disabled and need the services of the River Street Shelter? Or is that the point? Would you like more people to be disabled so you can get more jobs, make more money for these services? I mean, that sounds like that's a conspiracy theory I don't subscribe to. But it has that impact. In any case, throughout July and August, according to these documents from Tracy Huggin, I believe her name is, the overseer at the River Street Shelter, overseen also now by Monica Martinez as part of the whole oversight group Encompass, which she now heads, having climbed the ladder to the next position up. She was head of the Homeless Lack of Services Center earlier. Now she's executive director of Encompass, I believe. So the documents are interesting. They show an increasingly grim picture. And at the same time, there's hope from a really unexpected source. And I posted this story on Santa Cruz Indie Media, I guess yesterday morning, or maybe it was this morning, that Vancouver, Washington has moved to end the nighttime camping ban there. This is a city of, 160,000 people with numerous homeless people. I'm not quite sure what their homeless population is, but I posted a couple of the news stories. Their city council voted on Monday. They meet on Mondays. They did a first reading of a law that removes the camping ban at night and, moreover, allows for people to camp during the day with permits from the city manager or whatever. And I'm not about to say that they have any kind of liberal policy during the day, but at least they're changing their policy at night, which is what Los Angeles did under court order in 2007 with the Jones precedent, what San Diego did soon after in the Spencer decision. Again, none of this became precedent in law because these were settlements that were done, taking the issue out of the courts and kind of agreeing to do a sort of a back room shaky shake hands deal, which is really unfortunate, as some have written. But Vancouver moved 4 days ago or 3 days ago to end nighttime camping. Now, they have to have the law has to have a second reading, but this was voted unanimously by the Vancouver Washington City Council. That's not the Vancouver, B.C., larger city further north, but it is a sizable city on the edge of Oregon, the Oregon-Washington border. So, why do they do this? Well, let me read a little bit of this story to you. The Vancouver City Council is considering, this was actually before they actually voted it, allowing homeless people to sleep outside overnight legally. It has banned people from camping outside in public places since the late 1990s. Police stopped enforcing the ban entirely about 2 weeks ago after the U.S. Justice Department put out a statement of interest on August 6th saying that government can't ban people from sleeping outside. That's the famous Bell versus Boise statement of interest that the Department of Justice weighed in on about a month ago now, which I'd kind of poo-pooed it a bit because it's similar to what the government came in with 20 years ago in a couple of other cases, and there wasn't any impact. But this time, apparently, there is, at least in Vancouver, Washington. And in Santa Cruz, that's not the case. Sleeping tickets are being given out like hotcakes, sometimes two in a night to the same person. That's what happened at the Red Church, I believe, three or four nights ago, possibly the Monday before last. I sometimes get my Monday nights or my nights at the Red Church confused. Reading more of this story from Vancouver, the document that the Department of Justice put out says banning people from sleeping is like saying being homeless is illegal, which the Justice Department says is unconstitutional. It just keeps them homeless. Tents and tarps line the streets around the Sharehouse homeless shelter on West 13th Street in Vancouver. Catherine Garrett, the shelter's program director, said the problem is worse than ever. I've never seen this much open camping before, said Garrett, who's been working with the homeless in Vancouver since 2001. She said the Sharehouse is now serving a record 9,000 meals per month. It impacts more garbage, said Garrett, about the camping situation. It impacts things we can't provide for them. We don't have enough blankets. We don't have the backpacks. Technically, the people camping out in the area are now breaking the law. Since 1997, the city has made camping in public places a misdemeanor. A lot of times it just keeps them homeless, said Garrett. Getting tickets for camping, vagrancies, any of that always puts a black mark when it comes to getting employment or housing. Police Chief James McElvian told KATU officers hadn't been cracking down on the illegal camping all that much. On average, we're finding our officers setting about 9 people a month, whereas in Santa Cruz, which is a city one-third the size of Vancouver, I was counting several hundred camping tickets or being in a park after dark tickets where people were sleeping. Sometimes they don't want to give out camping tickets because it gives a bad odor to what they're doing. And also, one can't but imagine that the city legal eagles are a little nervous about this Boise versus Bell decision and the general, you know, real straightforward argument that if you're getting ticketing people who have no shelter, it doesn't do any good to say, well, you're on a waiting list and we'll dismiss your ticket later. Because the point of contact when police rouse you and move you is where the injury, the tort, the wrong occurs. And therefore, it's the crime. Not that sleeping is the crime, although it's been declared criminal in Santa Cruz, but waking people up at night and with the force and fear is the true crime. And then there's a subsequent story. Vancouver okays overnight camping in public spaces. Unanimous vote by City Council amends ordinance. Amending a Vancouver City ordinance to allow overnight camping in public places is just a baby step toward solving the city's homeless troubles and lack of shelter space, citizens told the City Council Monday. I don't want to see the council put a bow on our problem and make it look all pretty by providing camping hours when we're not addressing the real issue, Hoff neighborhood resident Heidi Owen said. Nonetheless, the council unanimously voted Monday to change Vancouver's unlawful camping ordinance to allow camping in public places from 9:30 p.m. to 6:30 a.m. Such overnight camping previously had been a misdemeanor. The change wouldn't affect park hours, parks closed from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m., or laws prohibiting disorderly conduct, drinking in public, urinating in public, and other health and safety issues. The city's legal staff recommended the change in response to a federal Department of Justice opinion issued August 8th on a case pending in the federal court in Boise, Idaho. Mayor Tim Leavitt said he realizes some residents aren't happy. We have to do this because we're not going to win taking on the Supreme Court, he said. City Manager Eric Holmes emphasized the ordinance revision is an interim measure while the city continues to look for solutions. Vancouver has a lack of toilets, shower, and trash cans for the homeless. Does this sound familiar, folks? And an overwhelming need for beds. So apparently, Tony Condotti, our city attorney, doesn't mind taking on the Supreme Court. After all, he gets paid for it, whether he wins or loses. And probably has a job for life in any case. The real reason, I think, that we have this happening in Washington and not yet in California, although it has happened in Los Angeles and San Diego under court pressure, specific court pressure, is because you have not just groups like Take Back Santa Cruz masquerading as public safety groups that are actually concerned with property values, gentrification, and political power, and they're using homeless as their scapegoats. And not just using them, they're really afraid of them. I mean, there's a genuine paranoid element there, or a cynical sense that people who live different lifestyles, who are forced to live differently, simply do not have the right to be the same rights they do, that their rights trump those of those whose very survival is being threatened by the way the police and the rangers and other hired authorities are acting. I mean, they're a danger, and they're bad, and they've created, you know, a right-wing pressure on the city council. But the city council and the city staff has been right-wing for years. This is nothing new. This is not because Take Back Santa Cruz suddenly came into power. This was the case when liberal mayors were in power. This is the case when Don Lane was mayor, or when all the scan liberals were mayor decades ago. There has been a real disconnect in Santa Cruz between people mouthing liberal causes abroad or genuinely supporting them and ignoring basic income disparities locally and the rights of people who have no choice but to sleep outside or those who are traveling through or have a different lifestyle and choose to be outside. So I encourage you to take a look at this story on Santa Cruz Indie Media, or you can join the Huff email. And there's an interesting debate between Gary Johnson and Razor Ray. Gary Johnson has spent four months out of a six-month sentence in jail and was sentenced to another 2 years for a political protest against the sleeping ban at the county building. He had a sign, something to the effect of sleep is not a crime, and they arrested him initially for trespass and changed the charge to lodging, which is the state version of the sleeping ban. But it's used by our prejudiced courts, Judge Gallagher notoriously, to criminalize resting of any kind when the police and the authorities decide that kind of protest is something they want to get rid of. They use 647E, or if an individual is sleeping in the county and they in a place which is not specifically barred. In the county, all roadways, for those who think there's no camping ban in the county, think again. I mean, there isn't a formal camping ban except in very four limited areas, but there is a law against habitating a vehicle and by the side of the road or in any roadway right-of-way, which goes right off the roads. And I don't know if county parks are closed at night. I haven't really researched that. I haven't heard of homeless people finding relief or refuge in county parks or elsewhere. So there is still the pariah status throughout the county as well as throughout the city. But the actions of the Vancouver, Washington City Council are quite a bright light for me. not because they're a bunch of wonderful, enlightened individuals, but because they're finally showing that common sense, in the sense of wanting not to get huge amounts of legal fees and legal penalties, is overcoming the kind of habitual mythology that rules here in Santa Cruz, which is everything's okay, except for the people who are criminals are outside at night. We got too many people here. It's a magnet effect. We can't afford to give them any human rights. We can go on doing what we're doing, criminalizing people, because that's just how it is. People shouldn't be coming here if they can't afford it. You hear, oh, they're all a bunch of drug users. I mean, there's a whole list of homilies that are mouthed by bigots in Santa Cruz that you can get past it real quick by saying, okay, well, if we get someone to do the lawsuit, and we might, because already an attorney has come forward who might be interested in taking, as I mentioned before, Christina Barnes' case, the woman who was abused by First Alarm Security two nights ago. And the protesters who are out there, who are saying, we're not going away, you can lie about us all you want, say we're doing all these bad things, although you won't name what they are, and you have no reports that indicate what they are, but we're not going away. Yeah, it upsets people, so we can't sleep at night because the people in our own group are walking around shouting and screaming, and you know, it's uncomfortable for us. Tough. We're here for the duration. So, you know, change it or deal with it. And I hope that's what we continue to do, and that's going to be coming up again next Tuesday. Let's hear a little more from last Tuesday, though, and from you, if you want to call in. I should advise you, this is going to be the last of two shows where you'll be able to call in. I may be able to go online with a pre-recorded show, but there'll be no call-in access, as far as I know, at least that's my understanding. We won't have a radio station that broadcasts anymore because, well, we may be able to broadcast via prepared shows that were recorded previously. That could happen. But because the listenership and the staff of Free Radio has not been able to get it together to find a studio, it could be that, you know, people just are not that interested anymore in Free Radio Santa Cruz. And, you know, everything has its day, everything has its time, everything comes and eventually goes. So, don't know. If you have any ideas about a studio, place where we could go have a 10x10 space with access to internet and electricity, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I've got to say I've received very few calls. Or go to freakradio.org and let us know about that. And we'll look into it and try to help. And you'll also, as I was mentioning frequently in the last show, but I haven't yet mentioned in this show, you get a $500 reward if you do. $500 if you find us a place for a year. That was donated by some people who do care about Free Radio and want to see it continue. And so think about that and help out if you can. Back to more interviews from, I guess today's the 17th, so it was the 15th of September.
I don't know.
Yeah, last night I just was up with cardboard. It was the night before. I was up on top of cardboard.
Cardboard is better than cement,
cool.
I guess.
It's not cool, though, right now.
So. Not, but it could be getting chillier. It doesn't feel like it's going to be terribly warm tonight.
Nah, but I put on, like, two pairs of pants and, you know, my jacket. So.
Fair enough. And again, we've been talking with?
Lupe Avila.
Gracias, Señor Avila. Señor Lupe.
Let's go take a nap, Chad.
Any street reports? No? No? Mouth is full, sorry. So already we have a couple of tents set up. Fox has his usual ensemble. And some First Alarm skis are here chatting with a man who's lounging about in a lounge chair with his service dog. Any reports from the street?
Just that this new guy seems to be a real arrogant prick, but other than that, yeah.
The name of the new man you're speaking of?
I don't know, the one in all black there. That would be the one.
Well, we can. Has he done something specific that concerns you?
Oh, he told Christina to shut up, as I recall, and that was not too
That's Lucero. Talking about Lucero?
No, Christina, the black girl across the street.
Really?
Yeah, he told her to.
Christina was the woman who was subsequently assaulted by two of the security guards who detained her violently, and then she was taken away to jail on their testimony. And I got to tell you, I have a low opinion of the laws the police enforce, and I know that they stretch the truth and can distort the truth and are not held to account for stories. I'm talking about the Santa Cruz police. I'm not just talking about the Ferguson police, you know, or the Baltimore police. I'm talking to, or the South Carolina police. No, no. Or the Oakland police. No, Santa Cruz police. And that's based on the experience of listening to such great icons as Butchie Baker lying in court. Butchie Lauren Baker, you know, the guy who became the great hero of the police department along with Elizabeth Butler 2 years ago when he was shot when he and Butler were doing a house arrest or inquiry. You know, you're supposed to say, you know, no bad things about the dead. No, you say true things about what went down. And the issue of my respect for first alarm security, which varies, you know, from time to time. I mean, I have a lot of contact with security guards in the course of not just these protests, but in previous involvements. Some Huff activists went to the library to sign people up for sleep deprivation small claims lawsuits, which we have not followed up on yet and may never follow up on. But we also got reports of first alarm guards harassing people in the library, particularly Big John. This big guy was harassing folks in the library. But some people like some of these security guards. And, you know, different people have different experiences with folks, even folks in uniform who are getting the wrong kind of power and given the wrong kind of directions. But last night, I may have some of this on audio, maybe playing it tonight or on my last show on Sunday. One of the security guards, there was an incident on the corner. I have Israel in the studio with me. Israel, do you remember the incident that precipitated my approaching the security guard and asking for his ID? He was on the sidewalk. He backed up Church Street. Do you remember what the original issue was? Why?
Alex was talking.
I want to get a little closer to the mic there.
I believe Alex was talking to him. And I don't know. I saw Alex talk to him far away. And I think he was questioning about what happened to Christina earlier. And then he started saying, you're saying inappropriate things and all this stuff.
The security guard started saying that?
No, Alex did.
Right.
And got all mad because I think that, I don't know what he said, but he said something that really broke Alex, who seemed to be harassed by them.
Alex is a man, a writer and a photojournalist. You can find his story on IndieBay. Go ahead.
Yeah, he was complaining about a couple of first alarm guys all night continually from the minute he got there till that incident over there. So I don't know what was going on, but I know they were harassing him.
When I went over there, I mean, I wanted to find out what was going on, so I asked the security guard what his name was and what his number was. And he immediately covered his badge and his number and started backing away. And I approached for closer, and I said, give me your badge number and your name, please. And I'd like to know that, or give me your superior's name. And he said, back away from me. And I said, no, I want to know what your name and your badge number is. You're here. Our city funding is paying for you through, I don't know whether it's through the police department or through some other fund of the city manager, but you're a public servant here. You're being employed as a public servant. You seem to think you're a policeman, which you're not. I didn't say this. And he kept raging. You know, he kept backing away further and saying, stay away. I'm calling the police. And he eventually did call the police. And when the police arrived, he insisted I had touched him and that I tried to grab him. And he made some false claims about what I was doing with him. And he couldn't possibly really believe that. It was something and he didn't seem terribly upset either. It seemed like, in a way, he was, he had made a deliberate decision not to tell the truth about this because he felt he could get away with it. And I suspect he did. I was never interviewed. I thought I was going to be arrested because they had already arrested Christina Barnes, the woman you hear him. There's a complaint by another homeless person that the security guards were harassing her and telling her to shut up because it had to do with the dispute she was having with her partner. And then later they were making her scream and making her putting her in pain. With handcuffs that were inappropriately applied, apparently, and an arrest that was based upon they said, touching a security guard. It's not like these folks have the notion that their badges and their uniforms both shield them from any kind of accountability, but also give them both the authority and the responsibility of interfering in the personal lives of people who are, in this situation, doing political protest, getting close to them, violating their private space, giving them orders, telling them to do this and that. You can give people orders, and if they don't respond, then, as I understand it, the first line of security is responsible to call the police. You know, we're witnessing a crime. Not to put them in handcuffs, not to drag them across the lawn, not certainly to make false charges, as they were doing with respect to me. And, yeah, that was some of the stuff I observed for the first time, really, with First Alarm, in a very personal way, because I was there when Christina Barnes was screaming and being held down, and I have to say, I mean, I don't think it was a deliberate form of torture, but they were ignoring her cries of pain. Israel, you observed some of this and you videoed it. Is it your isn't your video that's up online, right? No, but what did you observe with Christina? Do you think what do you think of these security guards? I've given you my impression. Am I being too hard on them? Get close to the mic if you can.
I don't think so. I feel like that, according to, you know, I think you can look at what's going on here from the beginning. You know, they obviously had a confrontation with her earlier. They've been antagonizing people. You know, we've been doing the protest. This is like our 10th, 11th protest. And we haven't had those kind of issues. I mean, we've had them harass us, but I feel like they had more First Alarm people there and new First Alarm people there who were more aggressive and more antagonizing to people. And people were complaining about the guy who put the handcuffs on her before all that happened. The people were saying he's been antagonizing people. Alex said he was antagonized by this guy. So this guy, this led up to it was, I mean, it built up. He was there antagonizing people way before he assaulted her. And so, I mean, I think that kind of paints a broader picture of what was going on. It was the first time he was there. I wonder what would happen if he was there the week before. You know, maybe something like this would happen again.
And there were 5 security guards there.
Yeah.
And there were fewer protesters than ever before. We had a smaller number, and there was no violence of any kind against any of the First Alarm security guards. Interestingly enough, we did have some controversies. I mean, people in the group had some real disputes. There was a dispute between 2 activists about when the food should be put out, because we had a limited amount of food, because our main food providers are away and not doing the food at this point. And then presumably they're going to be coming back, and hopefully things will improve, but we're just making do. And there was some sort of, you know, angry interchanges there. There was an angry interchange between Brent Adams and the group, some members in the group. Brent works with a group called Sanctuary Village. He brought his display device. He's also a videographer, brought his camera. And he wanted to speak at length about Sanctuary Village during one of our general assemblies. And I was facilitating, and at some point I tried to stop him because I felt it was not germane to the subject. And you might say I was doing a city council mayoral kind of veto after he'd talked. I said, well, if you want to give a speech about Sanctuary Village, you have a table right over there. You can announce it and people can come over. But no, he went on and there was some angry. So people responded by throwing his literature around, by removing his table. The First Alarm security guards did nothing when any of this happened. I think and Brent Adams was complaining that that these people are abusing me, these people are threatening me, and there was a couple of people who were angry with him. They were, you know, there was a sense in which they wanted him to leave, and there might have been even threats of physical force made. First Alarm security guards did nothing, and they were witnessing all this. And the idea that they're there to provide order, to engage in, you know, orderly assistance in these situations is completely ridiculous. They're there to enforce anti-homeless laws. and it seemed that was their only function. Now, they were also there to guard these Klieg lights that were there. So, let's have some more, and maybe a phone call or two if you have some thoughts, or you were present, or you may be coming to the next Freedom Sleeper Sleep Out number 11. There's going to be a press conference at 3 o'clock. At least that's what was announced by Rabbi Phil Posner. Of those of us who have been abused by police and first alarm security guards, to discuss it at some length, or maybe not. I'm not sure how long we're going to talk about it. And hopefully we'll get, media from around the world covering our press conference, or at least maybe a local person, if not someone from out of the area.
Shut up quite a few times, which was quite out of line, I thought. But other than that...
Did she shut up?
Oh, absolutely not. Yeah, no, she knows her, right? She knows her, right? She's a very smart woman.
And, I don't like those stink guards anywhere around my campsite, do I?
And there seems to be some hostility to the presence of first alarm security guards. Why would that be? I wonder. Could it be because we're at City Hall and one wonders what police are doing at City Hall? Could be. What's up? How's the brownie?
I don't know. This is not the time.
So, let's see what we have here. We have Christian Fouet, is that correct? Fouguet. Mr. Fouguet, I'm Robert. How do you do? And then we have Nathan Hammock. Nathan, how are you?
Great.
And, of course, the inevitable Chase Cotese.
The inevitable, the invincible.
Invincible, yeah. And hopefully uncorruptible.
Yeah.
Man who will stand up for the civil rights, even of the poorest. These are the names of the security guards. I was actually reading their name tags. It was still daylight. They weren't covering their name tags at this point. It was a friendlier atmosphere. Of course, police officers and security guards aren't supposed to cover their name tags, period. I would say, as a matter of policy, these are people entrusted with a special amount of force. And, again, I have nothing against the individuals here. But they have to be accountable for what they do. And also, when they don these sort of, RoboCop attires and roles, then they have to be treated as the RoboCops that they are, in the sense that it's really hard because a lot of folks say, well, look, the police officer is just a human being underneath. I mean, you want to treat people as human, and I do believe in treating people as human beings. But I also think you have to recognize what their role is and their behavior is. And that's what you have to respond to. And those who think that they can somehow woo the police into being sweet fellows who are going to join the revolution or suddenly become reform-minded, however reform-minded they'll tell you they are, and they are sincere often. Some of those first alarm security guards don't like the way traumatized people are treated. But if they're going to act as part of the occupying force and do it anyway for money, then they are a part of the problem and they are the abusers. And it's as simple as that. You can, spin all the theories and give out all the ideology you want. You can talk and you can talk and you can talk. But it's what you do that counts.
Yep.
Or will he simply follow the orders of the police department? That's an interesting question. I think, unfortunately, we already know the answer to that, sadly enough. But you have a good evening anyway.
Thank you. You too, Robert.
Certainly. All of you.
Be safe.
Enjoy. Try to find a good job somewhere. This is a good job? Come on.
I get to watch you guys all day.
Yeah, well, I suppose it's educational, isn't it? And folks are setting up, it looks like the shower is being set up. That's a portable tent. Yes?
It's so complicated that...
We're on it right now. Okay, no problem. Do you want to begin to touch on it?
The guards and the cops have nothing against giving a mentally ill person tickets each time, even though his mom really can't pay. She's paying.
Who are they giving tickets to?
It's got to be anonymous, but it's a mentally ill person.
Is it someone here at City Hall?
Not here right now.
But are we talking about it happening at City Hall? Or?
No. I don't.
It's elsewhere.
Elsewhere in town.
And
city
you've
limits.
Observed this. You've gotten reports.
I haven't directly observed it, but I know since I'm practically a family member that she's paying the fines.
$57 per sleeping ticket, perhaps.
These are sleeping tickets.
Yeah.
And he must have had more than one.
So remember, all he has to do in order to presumably address these, they say, is to call the River Street shelter number.
I was about to tell her, his mother.
And that can be, I'm told
she
by
the... She has already been dealing with it, so I don't know if it's too late now.
Right, and I also, I think they may be a little obnoxiously picky about simply giving a letter that says our place was full And my response to them was, if you don't want to give a letter, we'll subpoena you into court. You can go and testify.
Yes, I don't know if it's too late, and I don't know if they would actually treat her that way if she did go. But
well, remember, all you have to do is give her name or his name over the phone. In fact, you can call and say, I'm
the... You mean even a not interested party, which such as... I mean, I'm not a family member.
Right,
exactly. I'm not his
you
mother.
You just say, I'm so-and-so. Put me on the list. Don't even give your name. Give their name. Put me on the list. That's my name.
Well,
I sleep outside. I'd like to be on the waiting list for the River Street Shelter.
She didn't... I don't think she did that, and I would have told her. But now it's too late, and I...
And for those who are listening, you should write down this number. The River Street Shelter's number, according to... the browser, it's at 115 Coral Street, is 459-6644. That's 459-6644. 459-6644. They have a 24-hour line. You call up and you say, my name is, give your name, spell your last name and say, I want to be put on the waiting list for the River Street Shelter. They are then supposed to, if you then get a sleeping ticket or a camping ticket, in the next, actually, 3 days, you have to do it every 3 days to renew, they're supposed to have that dismissed and send your name to the city attorney. Throughout July and August, as I said before, public documents show they sent zero names to the city attorney. Now they claim that they're doing this more. I've also received documents from the Nydia Patino, who's the kind of the public records woman at City Hall, and helpful, actually. Thank you, Nydia, for your help. The police department has sent me a list of arrests and citations given in June, July, and August for camping. Can you guess how many there were, Israel?
How many?
Throw out a number.
147.
847. That's SCPD alone doesn't include parks and rec tickets, which we have yet to investigate during those 3 months. They have not stopped giving out sleeping tickets. They're continuing what they're doing, and they're giving no apologies for it. I don't know how many of these tickets also included stayaway orders. I suppose I should go into that and find that out. But I've also requested parks and rec citations be made available, and I will be sending to Nydia a follow-up to say, good, you showed us the police department records. That's shameful enough. Now let's get the whole picture and see what the Rangers are doing, because you have to add these two groups together to see the total number of crimes against the homeless being committed by the police just on the issue of sleeping alone. And this is a city that prides itself, of course, on being the great liberal Santa Cruz. Come on. Let's get real here, folks, and let's force these things to a civilized and humane conclusion. So, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm going to give you a break from my voice. If I can find the appropriate disc, that is. Here's a little something from an old-time performer. Hasn't been in Santa Cruz for a while. Mike True, who... actually won, I think, $10,000 or $15,000 from our very favorite Butchie Baker of the police department for a false arrest for seizing his music, which he was displaying for either donation or sale. I think it was donation at the time. And Baker had him busted. And he then sued the city and came away with some money. And to some extent, it helped to change the policy of the city. Let's hear a little song from Mike True.
couldn't watch the sky, but the clouds are passing by. I'm here in Austin, waiting on that rain. Waiting on that Austin city rain. There ain't a cloud up in the sky. We said our goodbyes, so I still wonder why I'm here in Austin, waiting on that rain. Well, I grab another taco, phone down another Joe. Siesta time, time to find some shade. I'm lost in Austin, got no place left to go. I'm here in Austin, waiting on that rain. Waiting on that Austin city rain. There ain't a cloud up in the sky. We said our goodbyes, so I still wonder why I'm here in Austin, waiting on that rain. Another sunset in the dusty west, from La Cantina, house of purple sage. The beer is warm here, but at least it's mostly wet. I'm still in Austin, still waiting on that rain. Waiting on that Austin city rain. There ain't a cloud up in the sky. Said our goodbyes, so I still wonder why I'm here in Austin, waiting on that rain. Yeah, we said our goodbyes, but it's too damn dry to cry. I'm here in Austin, waiting on that rain.
Waiting on that rain, Mike True, from his album Alive in New Orleans. I'm not sure if he's still in New Orleans or is in the Midwest somewhere. Coral knows Mike True well, and she could tell us. A couple of articles I looked at in the last few days, mostly showing the hostility and bias of mainstream media and the attempt to twist around a story to blame the victims. There's a big three-quarters page story in the San Francisco Chronicle's Bay Area section of September 15th, 2 days ago, which spoils of break-ins fill empty building. Police aware of problem, but can't link squatters to stolen goods. And there's pictures of needles and squatters getting into this building on a daily basis, and tourist cars are broken into nearby, and there's kids' books and sweaters pulled from suitcases, and there are thieves who may have taken stuff, and the building is used as a clearinghouse and so forth. And what I'm seeing here is sort of a general smear job of people who break into unused, vacant buildings for shelter. Because that's the reason people go into these buildings. If they are really high-level thieves, or even middle-level thieves, or even low-level thieves, they have their own place to live. They don't stash their stuff in an empty building nearby where it can be picked up by police or other people who are poor. I mean, it's completely absurd. And, of course, this is an attempt to essentially avoid any kind of responsibility or awareness of the fact that people need a place to live, and that's why they're in, that's why they're squatting in these in the large cities and in Santa Cruz too. At least that's been the case in the past. And instead of acknowledging that, what you have is you're demonizing them. Oh, these are needle users. These are thieves. These are people who are smashing car windows. You have no evidence of that in terms of who these people are. I mean, probably some people do that who do go into these buildings, just like some people do that who are in the nearby office buildings. But what this really is an attempt to put the jacket on everyone who is in this situation, so these people can turn. You can turn the community against people who should be supported by the community for trying to use an unused space to sleep in, to survive in, to come out of the cold in. And that, as Becky Johnson has said with her button and her bumper sticker after the Santa Cruz 11 trials and the 75 River Street occupation of the Occupy movement, vacant buildings are the crime. That means, you know, the attempt to use property as a profit-making device instead of acknowledging the needs of people to be, to have places to go to sleep and to use those vacant spaces is, it's the mantra of the money-making class. We have a caller. Uh-huh. Hi there, you're on Free Radio in the second to the last broadcast.
Second to last broadcast.
Yes.
Wow. Well, it was nice listening to Mike, too. Thank you. I think Coral just mentioned to me recently he might come see us all.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, he was one of the three True Brothers. There was another True Brother who was a strong activist up at UCSC during the UCSC Tent City that they had, that the Santa Cruz and University Police so violently broke up, torturing students up there. We actually have video of that, and none of whom were ever held accountable, of course, that I ever heard about, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, I have a question for you from what you were saying before. Uh-huh. I was listening carefully. I've read what I could of other people who were down there, descriptions where I could find it in Indy Bay and Facebook, and then I'm listening to you. Do you think the cop that snuck up to Christina from behind and then ultimately arrested her, that the security guard could arrest somebody?
I never heard that they snuck up from her from behind.
I was reading how he kept, like, shimmying near her, getting in her space, which was upsetting to me as a woman who's been raped before, that then he turns around and accuses her of doing that to him. That's just what struck me out of the description.
Yeah,
but,
I mean, I didn't see it, you know, and I'm not going to say, I did interview Christina after she got back from jail, and I think Alex DeRosi published some of that interview himself online on Santa Cruz Indie Media. We're talking about the woman who was assaulted at the
Freedom
Sleep number 10 2 days ago, and then was accused herself of battering this older first alarm security thug, who seems like in his own way a nice enough guy, but I cannot.
Yeah,
call him,
I like the big guy.
Can't call him a nice. He's not that big a guy. He's an old chunky guy, but sort of similar to me, but maybe even a little chunkier. I don't know. Maybe not. I mean, I'm chunkier than he is. Hard to say.
Well, it's better than t-shirts than a uniform.
I don't have an answer to that question though for you, caller. I don't know the exact circumstances. I did play just now, you know, a one witness stating that he saw the security guards harassing her. And this is before any incident that happened. This is earlier in the afternoon. This is about 6 or 6:15. Mm. And so I will play the later, you know, some of the screams of Christina Barnes and the outraged cries of the folks who are watching this. And then the police who showed up with seven squad cars blocking the street and who started citing, they cited Phil Posner and Louise Drummond, his partner, his wife, for standing in a parking space. And then they arrested Abby Samuels after she crossed the street carrying coffee for the demonstration, because when she was asked what her name was, she said, you know my name. I asked Forbus, who was the cop next to him.
Uh-huh.
And he said, okay, interfering with an officer, and they dragged her off to jail.
Oh, my God. You're making fools of yourself.
It's kind of amusing, but it's not, because it shows you, the hair-trigger kind of response these police are doing, and also their overreaction, their willingness to bring multiple squad cars down there, and they're being amped up by these phony complaints. Vague, anonymous complaints, unspecified complaints, which you may have heard me talk about earlier. I don't know if you were listening.
Yeah, for a while.
From Tina Shul, who is one of the slime balls, and I say that advisedly, who runs he's the assistant city manager. She graduated from being the person who helped destroy the Measure K Commission, making marijuana the lowest enforcement, to a higher position. These people seem to climb up the pyramid of decay or I don't know. If I were a religious man, I'd say sin or something, but, it's That's not my
I don't know what it's a pyramid of, but it's certainly obsolete, and it certainly never has been human rights sensitive, let alone civil rights sensitive.
But I did hear, Linda, that you have been finally been told that, you know, the extortion that the city was, the county was trying to get from you for being a part of a political protest defending the rights of homeless people in the Peace Camp 2010, the large fine was finally waived after our community service and fine.
It wasn't waived. I worked more than 27 hours, and then they were going to dismiss those. So I wrote a letter to the judge saying, what? Hey, that's not fair. I need you to count these hours, and, oh, by the way, I need an extension.
And the attempt to screw more time out of you or to did not succeed, and you finally got that issue presumably resolved. Congratulations.
Apparently, if you write a letter to Judge Burdick and you send two or three doctor's letters with you and you describe what you have already done that the community options court referral won't acknowledge, and then you put the phrase food not bombs at the end of your letter, the judge actually reads it and thinks about it.
Well, I guess that's encouraging. As I said, I always give Burdick a very mixed report card because I saw him essentially justify the behavior of DA Rebecca Young when she dragged 11 people through a year of hell and then another four people actually for two more years of hell in the Santa Cruz 11 case instead of dismissing all that shit, which is what he should have done off, you know, straight out of the gate. Anyway,
I wrote about how angry he was for not getting the evidence the way he wanted it, and yet it never occurred to him, even with your lawyer telling him that it's because the evidence isn't there, that he lost temper on the bench.
It's not even that the evidence wasn't there, which it wasn't. It's that they kept holding back what they had time and time again.
Oh,
and,
right.
In contempt of court, in contempt of his court order. And it was clearly a farce to have, well, in the beginning, to have one inexperienced former journalist turned lawyer, Rebecca Young, facing 11 experienced defense lawyers. It was ridiculous.
It showed
how little they actually took the case seriously, you know.
Attitude.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's attitude toward women, for one thing, that they're disposable.
Anyway, I'm going to leave these historic matters to history. Anything else you want to talk about? Because I got 20 minutes left in my next
and
last broadcast.
I just wonder if it was racism. If the guy was going around provoking everyone, but the only one he really abused outright was the one woman who was black, what does that mean? But it's a rhetorical question for now. I just wanted to share it with you.
Mm-hmm. Okie doke, you did. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
All righty.
Good show.
Bye-bye. Number is 427-3772. Here's some more from Ye Olde Freedom Sleepers Protest Number 10. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM. Next to the last broadcast of my show, Bathrop Spears broadcast at least in this format. We'll be maybe doing some shows without call-in that were pre-recorded. And you can always listen to old shows if you're a nostalgia buff by going to the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, huffsantacruz.org, and looking up the name Bathrobes Piers Broadsides, and you'll be able to see literally hundreds of old shows. So even though you won't be able to get me, maybe not be here in the present, I will still be a fond memory, or perhaps not so fond for some.
I thought that it would have had to have been her.
Well, it won't be too late for tomorrow night and the next night. That still could be useful.
The person, his mother does not live in the community. She comes to visit. So it's more problematic for her since she doesn't live here.
Right, but it's, imagine, a burden on her
He would never have tried to go up there and put his name on. He doesn't like going to the shelter.
Well, you don't have to go to the shelter to do it. All
no,
you have to do is now is call
even,
in.
He wouldn't even have called. I might have, but...
Right, but someone should just do it for
him. Again, call the River Street Shelter. If you are homeless, or actually even know homeless people who would call if they could, and call the person on the line and say, I am such and such, spell your name, and say, I want to get on the waiting list. That's my suggestion to folks, because I think people need to be on those lists, because clearly there is no diminution in the attacks on homeless people by writing sleeping ban tickets and camping ban tickets. As I said, the exact number of such citations There are 824 citations from, I think we're talking June 1st, 2015, through, I guess, September 1st, 2015. The 3 months of June, July, and August. That is nearly 300 citations a month from the police alone. And somebody say, well, it's only 10 tickets a day. I mean, you know, I think of how many people are getting going away stock-free without tickets. I suppose that's what some people will say. Also, we need some help in dealing with these citations in public records. I have gotten a generous offer from one woman, and I'm going to see if I can get back to her, if I can ever organize myself sufficiently. A shout-out to Avian. Thank you for your help offering to go through these public records. I make a lot of public records requests. I get a lot of public records, but I don't have time to manage them, sometimes not even to catalog them adequately. But I'm hoping that the fact that we have them means that somewhere down the line, particularly if attorneys with itchy trigger fingers or itchy money fingers get involved, that there's going to be some consequences for those who think they can get away with this shit because they're in positions of government authority. We'll see how that goes. 427-3772 is the call-in number here. A couple of other quick things. San Jose Mercury News has been doing persistently covering the cover-up, if you will, of the Santa Clara County Sheriff's Department and the slaying of a guy called Tree. Is it Roger Tree? I got to get the name again. Michael Tree, on August 26th, where he was beaten to death, it seems, by three guards at the Santa Clara County Jail. And now it turns out that two of the three Santa Clara County jail guards charged with killing this guy had previously text messaged each other about evading jail surveillance cameras and twisting up inmates, and the third guard was involved in three suspicious use of force incidents, prosecutors said in new court filings. These are prosecutors. Of course, they are prosecuting the guards. Prosecutor Matt Bracker filed the papers to oppose the guards' request to be freed on bail while the murder and assault case against them is pending. So there are two things to note here. One is they're only going after three guards. They're not going after the guy who ordered them and covered this up, the sheriff, a woman whose name is, I'll find it as I go through the story. But this Mercury News is covering the story, and through the public documents that are coming out, through the prosecution documents, we're finding out it's not just a case of, three bad apples in the barrel. Let's get rid of them and keep going as usual. It's a matter of the barrel. People who are watching the barrel are the bad apples as well, because they knew there was rotten shit going down. They knew that there was suspicious use of force incidents. Text messaging was going on back and forth. I don't know, actually, you know, how public those text messages were, but the issue is the institutional corruption and violence in this system, or the intrinsic violence of this system, which is engaged in a constant class war against people rather than a war on real violent crime. That's what you should look for when you read these stories. And I'm glad the Mercury News is covering this, and it's really been, a cause célèbre for it for the last 2 weeks. I don't usually find a lot of great interest in the mainstream papers, although I sedulously read them every day. The Sentinel is even worse, of course. The prosecutor's motion opposing bail reveals for the first time evidence suggesting a pattern of violence and disregard for the inmate's safety. Prosecutors had based the charges on medical evidence, statements by other inmates, and surveillance video to argue that no one but the accused guards could have inflicted Tree's lethal wounds. The bail motion argues, could be Tyree, by the way. I think that's probably the name. I know it's Tree or Tyree is the man who was killed. It also is true that one of the guards who is being held without bail for this murder, this beating to death of inmate Michael, I'll call him Tyree now, shortly, he apparently also assaulted. This also he assaulted another mentally ill prisoner, Juan Villa. That's new information, if it's true. The bail motion argues the accused officers pose a flight risk because they face a possible life sentence, as well as a threat to public safety, particularly to current and former inmates who witnessed the assault on Villa and said they heard Tyree screaming in pain. The nature of the crimes charged demonstrate defendants' tendency to abuse authority, their propensity for violence, lack of self-control, and disregard for the law. However, lawyers for the officers describe their clients as hardworking, stellar family men who are anything but dangerous and should have an opportunity to post bail. For example, Lubrin's lawyers said he allowed investigators to search his house, even though the warrant had the wrong address, and that he surrendered when an arrest warrant was issued, indicating he is not a flight risk. He also gave letters of support from church administrators, retired Campbell and San Jose police officers, and jail training officers and sergeants. The prosecution's filing contains chilling elements. And here again, I'm going to give a tip of the hat to the writers of this story, the writer, Tracy Kaplan. Tracy is, to some extent, you know, speculating here, but she's also presenting some evidence for her speculations. The prosecution's filing contains chilling elements. It says that about a month before Tyree died, Ferris, one of the defendants, texted Rodriguez, "I love 6A cell block. No camera and no groups. I hope I keep it. Just twist fools up, but write papered. Don't trust these peeps up there." Rodriguez allegedly responded, "No way. I slapped a guy yesterday. He was cursing at the nurse, and I told him to shut the fuck up," expletive deleted, "and have some respect. He said, or else what I slapped the expletive out of him to expletive with. He was so surprised about me slapping him that he sat in his bed with his hand on his cheek. Ha, ha, ha." Bracker also said in the motion that Lubrin was involved in three recent incidents involving force, two of which he failed to report by the end of his shift. Prosecutors have said the three men did not report their use of force, and also against either of these two guys, the one they killed, Tyree, or Villa, the one that was struck. And they also failed to summon medical assistance. In the first incident, unreported by Lubrin on March 26th, prosecutors said that an inmate reported Lubrin nearly broke his hand while using excessive force to move him into a cell. Lubrin admitted taking control of the inmate's arm, adding that the same inmate had challenged him the day before, accusing him of hating black people. Lubrin was counseled by a supervisor about the need to file a report. Lubrin also did not file a report about a July 2nd incident, in which he allegedly slammed an inmate into the wall, until 2 days later when he got wind that the inmates were asking for his badge number to report him to Internal Affairs, according to the brief. A nurse witnessed the incident, which took place after an inmate cursed at her. Lubrin demanded the inmate apologize. The nurse told the sergeant investigating the case she tried to defuse the situation by saying she did not need an apology. In his report, the sergeant reported that Lubrin's actions and failure to report warrant further investigation. But notice, didn't get further investigation. Hence, we now have a man dead in the jail. Tyree, Michael Tyree. Are the people who didn't investigate this, who allowed these killers to roam free, these violent guards, to be let off scot-free? I don't see the prosecutors going after them. Again, I also want to say, this is prosecution claims. The prosecution, when it's finally got a case, even if it's against cops, which is rare, particularly in such a high-profile case where there's so much publicity and the evidence seems to be so damning. If it's as it's described, no one else could have beat this guy to death. The reports weren't filed. There's a history of violence. I mean, there seems to be some evidence that would lead you to conclude that these three guys, or one or two of them, are responsible. The prosecutors will try to build a good case for their own professional image. You got to be careful with prosecutors. I'm not terribly fond of them, nor am I in love with defense attorneys either, for that matter. As I said, I think this whole system is a way of subverting justice rather than effectuating it. And that's what it does on a regular basis. By contrast, the guards' lawyers said in court papers that they deserve a chance at freedom while they defend themselves. And there's an argument for that. I mean, if they're really not going to run away, they should be able to have full access to defend themselves. They sure as hell shouldn't be employed by the county while that's going on, I wouldn't think, at least in jail. And the real issue is going to be protecting the inmates who may file reports now against other guards that are violent. And there's not much discussion of that. The guards' lawyers took issue with the inmates who told investigators they heard Tyree screaming in pain, arguing the mentally ill man screamed regularly. The inmates' accounts are unreliable, they argue, because in that cell block are former gang members with serious personal histories or who suffer from hallucinations or delusional thinking because they are mentally ill. You can't believe them, in other words. Ferris's lawyer, William Rappaport, wrote that in his short but dedicated career in law enforcement, Ferris has earned the respect of not only his co-workers, but those whose safety and security he oversaw. Although they haven't presented a petition from the inmates asking that these guards be allowed to be released on bail or that they be exonerated, so that's kind of interesting. And there's more. I mean, there's some... The guy should definitely have a fair trial, but the real issue is, does the evidence indicate for the general public right now, not that we want to go and punish the guards, but that we want to address a standing series of abuses that hasn't stopped just because these particular guards have been found out? There's more around another story from the Mercury News on the same kind of subject. Board opts for body cameras on jail guards. Three officers beating prompts the move for body cameras. And I haven't got time to talk about that. I may go into it on Sunday on my last show. Santa Cruz County has awarded a $2 million grant. But, of course, they have no emergency services for people in the city for sleeping at night. And instead they have 824 arrests in 3 months. From the police department alone, and probably an equal number from Parks and Rec. That would be my guess. Or at least we're talking over 1,000 arrests by both combined. Uncle Dennis should be coming in shortly with his last show, at least his last live show for a while, unless somebody suddenly demands a $500 reward for finding us a studio space. Call in at 423-4833. Leave me a message, and you may be the lucky winner of 5 C-notes if you got a studio space for us to go to that we can rent for a year. Let's hear a little more from the protest. And if you want to actually hear the screams, well, I'll play you a little bit of Christina from on the article on Indie Bay, the video that's there, which you can actually hear yourself. But and I'll play some of my commentary on Sunday when I come back. And again, this is Alex DeRosi with a video, and he describes it as follows: on the evening of September 15th, two first alarm security guards, Nathan Hammack and Ken Hiatala, violently detained Christina Latic Barnes, a black woman who had been peacefully sitting on the lawn in the courtyard of Santa Cruz City Hall during hours, and the area is open to the public. Security guards are employed by the city to monitor the freedom sleepers who held their 10th in a series of sleepouts. And let's see if we have a WinAmp operational. We might, and it looks like we don't, actually. Somebody turned off the WinAmp. No, dear. Well, let's see here. Let me fuddle around here for a moment and play you a little bit from this Indie Bay story. This is from video at the time, Tuesday night, probably around 10 o'clock at night, something like that. And here it is.
What is the charge?
We don't trust you. Why are you hurting her?
What's the charge?
Stop hurting her. Maybe stop resisting.
Stop kicking.
The same, but you can also see the video, which is much more instructive. And Christina is indeed kicking her leg. I mean, she's and they're holding. She isn't wearing any shoes, so I don't know that it's a terribly serious weapon. Israel, you videoed some of this. Did you see anything that? And you've also reviewed the footage that's on Santa Cruz Indy Media. Did you notice anything in your footage or in your experience that we should mention to the community that bears on what went down there?
I think that says it all. I mean, not that I can think of.
Okay, I'm going to play a little bit of the audio I have, although Uncle Dennis is coming in shortly and I've got to leave. But again, if you want to hear more, you can come back to the last Sunday show I'll be doing. That's at 9:30 in the morning in 3 days. Or you can come to the Tuesday sleepout and talk to Christina directly. Or you can talk to her lawyer. I mean, I think her lawyer is very interested in accounts of this. I don't know if she's actually hired a lawyer, but there is a lawyer who I've spoken to who said he's willing to certainly talk with her about this case. Let's listen to a little of what I got out of this situation when I was standing very close to the event. And here's what I got.
Come on. We'll move the meeting over here.
I'm really shocked.
This is not good tonight. This is not a good thing tonight.
I know.
This whole thing is bad.
I'm really shocked how bad. I know, Brian.
It's everybody's ego is out there, and it's just bad energy.
He's been pretty cooperative until tonight.
Okay, so
what was she originally arrested for?
That I don't know.
That's the issue.
But that doesn't...
Did you see the assault?
No.
Okay.
That's what they said.
Did you see the assault originally, or did you see the assault?
I was assaulted.
Okay. Well, the first line security guard says he was assaulted. So the police officer is loosening the cuffs.
And I'm having my usual technical problems here. My apologies. This is